start. Sooners of Oklahoma at 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports performance coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey. How are we doing today, D-Mac?
What's going on, B? Good to see you, brother. Doing well. Blessed, excited about 1 week closer to the season starting. It's going to be fun times, man, breaking down these position groups, getting into the weeds on what's happening, as these guys get prepared to jump into fall camp. I think fall camp's in a week. It's like a week earlier. It's like July 29th or something. So let's have at it, bro. Let's have at it.
Let's do it, man. And as always, before we get started, I want to remind everybody, the Barry and Mac Show is brought to you by OUInsider.com. If you want all of the recruiting news, all of the team news, a lot of what we are going to tell you today, some of it we'll hint at. Some of you, we're just going to give you the goods that we know of and what we're thinking. A lot of this is projection, just kind of us seeing, knowing what was there previous year, and trying to project forward. But man, if you want the guts, the meat and potatoes of what's going on for your Sooners behind those walls, right? The walls that you don't always get access to, go over to OUInsider.com. Brandon, Parker, Jesse, Brody, I forget Brody. Brody does a good job. Brian Clinton, all of the guys. Blake, doing a fantastic job bringing you all just excellent top tier Sooner content. We are interacting over there on the message board as well. I just posted evals on Cortez Mills, Amarion Robinson, recent Sooner commits. Got more coming up. Guy, wide receiver position, defensive back position, and we're going to be doing a lot more of that. The people are loving it. So if you are not a member at OUInsider.com, partner with Rivals, go over there right now and get yourself a membership. But DMAC, the position breakdowns begin, and we're beginning today. And we went back and forth a little bit. You just give folks a little inside baseball. We went back and forth on what position groups to do first, right? There's a lot of choices. But the one that's probably the hottest topic and that seems to be on most people's minds, primarily because of recruiting, but I would say just in general, for OU to have the success that they want to have this year, is the offensive line, right? You go into the SEC, you said it in our last show, the difference between the SEC and the Big 12 is the trenches. That is where the games are won and lost. That is where you win the conference or lose the conference. We've seen good teams get to the conference championship in the SEC. If they don't have the Joes and Jimmies in the middle, manning that offensive front or that defensive front, you don't win the conference. It is as simple as that. And then going forward, you're not winning a national championship if you don't have the Jimmies and the Joes, as well as the coaching staff, the strength and conditioning, the mechanisms behind what contenders have year in and year out. So we're looking at the offensive line today. We're going to give you our thoughts. I say before we get rolling, D-Mac, because I want to get your initial thoughts on this, let me just go over real quick for folks who, you know, maybe they're casual, maybe they don't know some of the additions, right, to the team. So I just want to go over a general projected starting lineup. And there's some really good stuff over on OUInsider.com about a couple of players, and we're going to talk about that. But right now, you had Michael Tarkin, who came in from USC, right? Going to be a senior, a grad transfer. Jacob Sexton, right? Guy who fans have really been clamoring for. Those guys are at the left side, left tackle, left guard as Sexton. In the middle at center, we're going to talk about this today. You've got a battle going on. You got Josh Bates. You got Branson Hickman coming from SMU. Right guard, Fabechi Nwewu. Hopefully I didn't butcher that name too bad. Of course, you got some incomers, right? Eugene Brooks, Eddie Pierre-Louis, and Nwewu also an addition in the portal. OU did some major work there this offseason, and we'll probably discuss that. Then at right tackle, looking at Jake Taylor. And then, of course, another addition in Spencer Brown, who I believe also Michigan State. So OU did a lot of work there. Went to Michigan State to get some guys. But DMAC, you hear the names, right? That there are some names that were there last year, aren't there this year, right? You got some guys who came from big schools, right? You got your SMU, who has been, you know, a really good program past 2 or 3 years. They've been a very solid team, good quarterback play, good run game. You know, you got Luttrell bringing in his new system for OU. It looks a lot like Lebby's, but certainly some wrinkles there. But Beedenbow keeps things consistent. What is your initial take before we dive into the weeds of what this offensive line looks like right now, and then where you think it projects, and who are going to be some of the studs along that line?
The first thing I want to say is I do not think the offensive line will look like Levy's offensive line. Very basic scheme, very elementary even, I would say, actual gameplay. And, you know, easy for the defense to respond and react to. In fact, even get a beat on. So I don't think the offensive line is going to look the same. Again, last year, I think we're in week 8. If I remember correctly, I think, God, I forgot who we're playing. But we're playing like, I think we're playing Tech or Kansas even. And we're finally running with a sniffer and doing a wham block. Yeah. Like, that's a staple of college, high school football now, right? And you see, it's week 8. And we're finally getting that backside in without any front side help by putting a tight end off the line of scrimmage and letting him come across the formation. So we're going to see a ton more of that. And in fact, to that point, the complexities of how defenses are going to have to prepare against us is just going to be more reprieve for the offense. It's going to give Jackson more freedom. I would even say more time. And so since you brought up Seth and scheme, I think the scheme in itself is already going to make Seth look better. Excuse me, JFA look better. And you know, it's funny. This scheme would have made Dillon Gabriel look better. You know, for all of his warts and shortcomings and whatever, right, whatever your issues were with him, you and I didn't love him, but we respected him and we're super grateful that he brought us back from where we were when Link left. Yeah. The fact is the offense had a 1-2, right? We had our bread and butter, and then we had a kind of a trick play and or a tendency breaker off of it. That's it. We always talked about the lack of depth and the lack of complexity, layered offense. We're going to run a sweep, and then we're going to run a sweep with the backside, you know, action off of it. And then we're going to run, you know, who know, the belly trap off of it. I mean, I'm throwing some 90s and 80s concepts in there, yeah. But I mean, like, still, you know what I mean? The offense, very elementary. Very midline stuff, you know, RPO off of that, and then some trick stuff off of that. Like, that was the bread and butter of Lebby, and with Seth, you're gonna get a lot more. In fact, we should probably break down what that offense looks like. We did a great analysis on OSI, OUI, but that's probably something we should talk about, right? Seth's tree versus Lebby's tree, and what fans and individuals can expect to see, because it's a big difference. However, Seth being in the program for a full year does provide the continuity where guys are not speaking a brand new language, trying to learn Spanish 1 as ninth graders, you know, trying to learn a new scheme and trying to remember, you know, what language even means pre-snap, during snap, and post-snap. So it's a big deal to have that continuity in place, and Seth coming home, Lebby being a Sooner. There's a lot of connecting dots that make this thing feel like it's going to be a natural. But the talent is there. You know, I posted on Twitter, I don't know, maybe a week or two ago, and I said, you know, someone asked me, hey, Mackie, what's your biggest concern? My biggest concern is still the offensive line. I saw the tweet about Taylor. I hear everybody up in a roar over Sexton. Somebody asked me, I think I was doing the live with Parker, and someone was like, who do you think is on the offensive side? And everybody was kind of like, Sexton, dude, I haven't seen Sexton be anybody on a Saturday yet that is worth talking about being a bona fide. He's not a bona fide yet. He has potential. He's been talked up. Sounds like he's a program guy. But as of right now, it's an if and an unknown. So Until further notice, the offensive line is my biggest question mark. But like I said, the talent is there. And there's two types of unknowns that teams have to decipher going into a season. One is there's a lot of new faces who haven't proven themselves and trying to, right, create that chemistry, that synergy that says, hey, we're gonna turn into a championship caliber offensive line. The other one is you've got a lot of returning guys, but the returning guys you got didn't do so well the year before. And so we don't have the secondary option. We do have the affirmative, the first. And so seeing a lot of new faces, seeing guys putting in new positions, you know, someone asked me about Taylor. I'm firmly in the we'll wait and see community as it relates to Taylor. I do believe Sexton's going to be ready to play, putting him at right guard or wherever they're going to end up.
Right,
where he's
guard.
End up
I think for me, it depends on what Beedenbow sees, right? Like if you got a guy like Tarkin who's playing well, maybe a Logan Howland who shows you that he can get good snaps and you can take a big, long athletic guy and move him inside. Like there's a lot of
Doesn't
ways
you
can go about this.
Yeah. Doesn't hurt you. My biggest issue is center. Let me say this and then I'm going to get
go
to you.
For it, man.
My biggest issue is center. You made me feel better. You know, talking about center, I was really concerned about Bates. I think Bates is a guy you want as quality depth, excuse me. I think he's a guy, if you need him for a week or two, he can play winning football. I think he's a guy, if he's got supreme competition and he's willing to work, he could be a 1A, 1B type guy. But if he's just your entrenched guy, the ceiling isn't high enough to be a championship caliber center. And that's just Mackie's opinion. I'm just going off what I've seen on film and production. But adding, right, that second layer, right, making sure you have somebody like Branson who's coming in and is going to be a veteran guy who's been played in some games and has some skill sets that are going to say, hey, Bates, if you can't, like you brought it up right before we start recording, a D lineman knows how to, you know, wiggle and swim. If Bates can't beat that, we've got another option that's a more athletic, quicker feet, stay within his hips, and get a hand, you know, get a punch in on a defensive tackle and don't just let him swim.
Yeah, it's huge. And we'll talk about Hickman for a second. I've heard fantastic things about him, even when he was at SMU, just some connections with some guys that I've heard about. Attitude wise, he brings it. He's a guy who kind of your center type guy, right? That Burcham, Eichard, Darling, like all those guys, they
couple
feel
loose
like
screws.
Yeah.
Screws.
Exactly. Like you want that in your center a little bit, right? You want a guy who's,
definitely.
I mean, to play that position, just think about how nutty it is. You're going against typically the biggest guy on the defensive side of the ball, right? The guy who probably packs the biggest punch in his hands. Every single play is a freaking car crash for you that you're enduring, right? You play out on the edge, you know, those left and right tackles, man, sometimes they get a play off or two, right? If it's not going that way, man, they can just chill, put the arm out, hang out for a second, man. At center, you're snapping that ball. You got to worry about the snap. You got to worry about the calls. You got to worry about this guy beaming across the line of scrimmage, right? That straight line from A to B is real close when you're playing inside, man. You get a guy blitzing that A and B cap, brother, you're going to be that's trouble, and you got to be able to shift. You got to be able to move. So I think Bates, to kind of start with center, a thicker guy, right? A guy who just came to the program pretty stout but needed to clean up his frame quite a bit. I thought he had some rough weight on him. Looks a lot better, you know, and maybe in one more year he's got that development with the feet to where he can handle things. But athletically, I think Hickman's big enough, right? He's over 300 pounds now. I know at SMU he hovered right in the 290 to 300 range quite a bit. I bet you in the offseason when he's, you know, maybe not stuffing his face with food, he's probably a 290, 295 guy. But at OU, seems to have put on some good weight, and a lot of guys have, right? Logan Howland, 317. I think it's Eugene Brooks, right at 336. EPL's up over 300, like well over 300. And then you got Sexton and Taylor as well. And then Spencer Brown, who comes in from Michigan State, who I actually liked quite a bit, just to shore up depth at those tackle spots. And then I think Michael Tarkin is an interesting prospect, right? Because, and I want to get your take on this, you know, how guys on the offensive line can be at a program like USC, where one year that offensive line looks really good. And, you know, when Lincoln got there, their first year, I think people underestimated how good that offensive line was that he took over. And that was a big reason for their success. That's one of the reasons that they were able to run the football. Caleb just had more time, right? You go watch the Notre Dame game in 2022, USC Notre Dame, and then this one this past year, it's night and day. It's a completely different thing. And it was the offensive line that handled things. But you got a guy like Tarkin who looked really good on tape. I think he's going to be a guy to reckon with for the starting role. So like your Sextons and Taylors and all these incumbents, you know, quote unquote, they got to watch it, because there's some transfer portal guys who have come in to take some spots. Man, you see a guy like Tarkin out there on the perimeter. If you're on this team, and let me ask it this way, if you're on this team and you've been in the program like Sexton, like Taylor, let's go as far as like Everett, right? Bates, who's 2 years in, and you got these portal guys coming in who have shown some good stuff on film, who make no bones about it, they're coming to Biedenboe, and who has a good track record. They're coming to Biedenboe to get that 1 year to be one and done and then go get drafted, right? They're trying to pull the Stanford youngster. Oh my, his name escapes me right now. Oh my gosh, from last year. The kid who 75. Oh my gosh, how does
played right tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. Or but let me see
here. Nah, we'll pull him back up. He's no biggie.
Yeah,
no biggie.
But anyways, man, you see that and it makes you go, what are those players thinking? A guy like a Sexton, you know, like a Howland, like a Taylor, when you've got a guy like Tarkin coming in who's wanting to make an impact. Well, what is going on in the heads of those guys? And then how do they proceed with not having bad stress on them, right? With not being, you know, freaked out about this guy coming. What does that look like? Dynamics of the locker room, and then maybe your thoughts on a guy like Tarkin.
So number one, Walter Rouse is the guy you're talking about.
Walter Rouse.
You know, here's the deal. It's either or. And it really boils down to this. Are you going to have a championship culture or you're going to have a me culture, right? In a championship culture, right, you have guys who are willing to make a sacrifice or a compromise for the betterment of the team. And I think Sexton's a great example. To me, it feels like, and I don't have any insider knowledge, but it feels like guys who are worried about me say that I want to put myself in the premium or prime position to prepare for the next level. You know, someone says, hey, Sexton, you're going to be an NFL guy, right? You're the guy who says, okay, I want to be the left or the right tackle, because most people know tackle makes more money in the NFL, and it's a more prestigious position at the college level. Versus a guy who says, maybe I have some of the tackle measurables, but we've got a guy coming in who's a great player, and maybe he can play that position and I can bump in and play this position, because it's going to give us more quality depth in the front line, and it's going to stack depth in terms of your second and third team. So when I look at a guy like Sexton, who people say, hey, he can be a guard or he can be a tackle, and there's no question. All right, watch this. The kid who left for Mizzou, why'd he leave? Why'd the kid leave him for Mizzou? Green, why'd he leave? Because somebody told him he could be a tackle. He was an amazing guard for us last year as a true freshman, and could have bounced out to tackle this year. Parents wanted to get paid, so we hear. But sure, the kid went at the premium position, right? So in my opinion, that's a me type guy. You don't downgrade. Let me tell you, man, you got a bombshell girlfriend who's a 10, and she's studying engineering, and she's humble and feminine and a helpmeet and a rib. You know what I'm saying? All those good things. You don't downgrade her for a chick with a fat ass and you know, looks kind of sexy. You don't do that. Well, that's what happens when you leave OU and go to Mizzou. Like, what are we talking about, right?
Yep.
So to me, that is a sentiment, right? That is an ingredient of a me individual versus a championship caliber culture. So to see Sexton willingly say, I'm a guy who's been in the program 3 years, I'm a guy who was ballyhooed as a freshman. If you remember that Florida State game, Sexton was a guy. And then, of course, he has, you know, all that stuff happens. I like that temperament. That to me is kind of the residual impact of guys saying, yo, we want to win. And you sent me the article. I don't know where it came from, but they're saying, oh, the offensive line is quiet as kept, been the best unit this summer. That's bull crap. They say that every year because they know the offensive line is a very mental space, right? If you're an offensive line group and you're in your own head, that's a problem. And so let me say this. In all my years in the program and years being close to the program and having cousins and buddies who played at OU, it's probably been one or two summers, Barry, that I heard the O-line had a bad summer. And do you know when those summers were? 2003, all-time great offensive line. 2004, all-time great offensive line, right? When you've got a bunch of ballyhooed NFL, you know, Davin Josephs, Jamal Browns, Chaseon, right? You've got, you know, Coop and or, you know, all these other dudes. You've got to keep them reined in because, by the way, at that period of OU, and I hope I don't, you know, raise a ruckus here. The Barry Switzer guys are going to kill me if any of the OGs hear this, but I just got to tell the truth. From 01 to 04, money was flowing.
Wow.
It was flowing. It was flowing.
Broken news.
I don't know. I don't think if you know, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I mean, hey, man, they gave Blish his Heisman back. So I think if the you know, statute is over.
Listen to me. Those guys, it was Bob Stoops had a very tough time keeping the team. God, he had all Americans and national players all over the field on both sides of the ball, all over the field. Man. And what do you think? My last year, and I wasn't around the program so much in 02 because I was dealing with my concussions and I had to stay out of the sun for a semester. I dropped out for a semester and then finished up. But it was bananas. When L. Mitch and Pasha got there in 02-03, they were like, Mackie, yes, I told you. Like, listen, you know, let me show you how to move around in this place, you know what I'm saying, and get it in. So I said, tangent. So I say all that to say, when you hear that the O-line is having a great summer, to me, I take that sentiment as they're trying to get them in the right headspace because there are unknowns. They're a group that people have said a lot of negative things about. That doesn't mean they're not going to have a good season. I just take that with a grain of salt as of right now, because like I said, I've only seen 2 years maybe where think about it. How many times were we sold? I could throw some names out there from Patton's last years and when Beedenbo first got here of, oh, this guy's going to kill it in week zero, week one, week two. We're like, there's another dude who's clearly better who needs to play. Right. And those summers we were told they were going to have good years. So, cautiously optimistic, wait and see community, but we do have the talent. The transfer portal has given us the ability. I mean, when EPL and Brooks are two, three stylish guys, they're freshmen, but yeah. Listen, I was at the spring game. EPL was there. He's a monster compared to everybody else.
Yeah.
Everybody else that I saw was a 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". EPL is like
looking the part.
Different. He just looks different. Eugene, just a big, ginormous human being. If those guys are solidified as third teamers and going to learn from guys who know a thing or three about success, and guys like Sexton are willing to become better starting talent versus competing with another individual who could help, but limiting and putting someone else in a position to be a frontline starter, that's a championship type mindset.
Next thing I want to bring up, D-Mac, might be a weird cut there for the viewers, but had a little technical difficulty. But anyways, that's why we do some post-production. Next question, D-Mac. Historically, it has taken Beedenbo's group a second, and that's putting it nicely, to get the chemistry that is needed to have the run game going, to feel like Oklahoma typically feels by the end of the season. Right. We know every team goes through their bumps and bruises, but Beedenbo has seemed to have, especially the past few years, maybe even taken a little longer to get the groove right, get the chemistry right. You know, I don't know if they're afforded that same time this year. You know, Tennessee, that game's coming up pretty quick. Houston has some players, right? That game's gonna sneak up on you real fast. Tulane, who beat USC, you know, pretty recently. They're a team that has some guys. So it's not that they scare you, but we've seen SMU a year ago. If that offensive line is not moving people, if they're not doing what they need to do, play in and play out, there can be some issues. So I want to dive in a little bit to the football stuff in terms of trying to project what this team on that side of the ball at that group needs to be able to do. What are some of the things that will be expected in Luttrell's scheme? And do you think OU is going to be afforded this time, right? The growing pains that come with bringing in a lot of guys, or do you think that Beedenbow maybe needs to deploy, maybe not something new, but maybe try and get that one group locked in a little sooner in fall? Is that maybe what it looks like to get more reps there? How do you think in terms of actual pragmatic approach, right? In terms of actually getting this done, what does that look like? But first, in Luttrell's offense, maybe highlight some of the differences in the run game, because that's where the O-line is certainly the most valuable. These pass teams, they've always been good with pass blocking. Beedenbow really has never had an issue with that. The run game's been where they've struggled. Talk about that, and then, of course, the timeline that they're going to have opening the season.
I think one of the things that we can look forward to, or at least the bones of the offense requires, are athletic and powerful guards. And so it lends to the whole idea of taking a tackle type, longer individual with longer arms, where if I get you, I can move you. You gotta have a powerful base. But a guy like Sexton, it could be a sexy flip for him, because as a right guard in tandem with the tackle, Seth's going to do a lot of combo stuff. Seth's going to do a lot of stuff where we're climbing up on a backer. It's not going to just be man v man, or leaving a man alone and trying to overload one side of the defense and letting the quarterback read off a backside individual. It's going to be a lot of your traditional get a powerful man on a smaller man and move him and create space. When you move backers, when you double team zero techs or one techs, when you kick out or allow a D lineman to go upfield, and now you're climbing onto a backer or like a whole safety, and you've got that guard who's in that position, it creates big plays. And if you, one thing that you will always see in a Seth Luttrell offense is off tackle plays for 12, 15, 20 yards, meaning they're running in the 4, 5, 6, and 7 holes. And 6 and 7 is a little wide, but that's right off tackle, and actually in space with a big guy leading up. And that's how you get those real big runs when a team isn't necessarily blitzing and close to the line of scrimmage. And so think about it with the philosophy of Levy's defense, offense. Defenses have two choices. Either we're going to suppress and put a ton of pressure on the line of scrimmage, and then you can pop one, right? You've got backers blitzing. You got safeties coming in the C gaps or alleyway, you know, pre-snap. Or Levy's offense, you play a big zone, right? You play, a lot of teams started playing that 35 against us, 3 down linemen, 5 backers kind of hovering and slow playing everything and making the quarterback make a decision at or behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah. Well, run that offense to get Seth's offense. And they're just going to kick your ass big against little on the edges, because they're going to be a more traditional combo philosophy, fold philosophy, right? His offense is going to say, where can I get a matchup where one of my bigs is going and finding a little guy? And the running back runs that track in practice, runs that track in inside, runs that track in blitz pickup, runs that track its own team. And sure enough, when you get that look in the game, there it is. We watched film. We said they're going to be in an under 30 or 43, or they're going to be in an under 34, and they're going to be cheating to the weak side of the formation. And that safety has to fill backside C. And we run action this way and combo back this way. And that safety is the guy. That's prep. You've got a big on a little. That safety's either got to cancel him. He can't dive at his legs anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Roy was a killer at that. Roy would dive at their legs and blow everything up. Right. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
That safety's got to make a decision. The running back has practiced that play on Monday or Tuesday practice, Wednesday practice. They've walked through it on Friday practice. And coach has said to him, he said, hey, Tatum, He said to him, hey, Barnes, hey, Sochuk, there's going to be a play in the third quarter. They're going to line up in that under 43. We're going to overload them one side. They're going to be watching us. We're going to run that off tackle. And then they're going to run that off tackle, and they're going to combo it back the other way. And we're going to have Sexton as the right guard. He's going to take that step. The backer's going to scrape. He's going to come back the other way. Safety's backside C-gap. We got a big on a little. Go score a touchdown. Go hit your head against the goalpost. Like, I'm telling you, I remember being in the huddle and hearing, like, and then you're at Saturday. It's the third quarter. They're a little tired. We've had some success running play side. Boom. You run that combo off the play side. There it is. You got Howard Duncan leading up the hole, and he's got a block of safety, and we're in the end zone, and they're doing a push-up. You know what I'm saying? They're pushing us up because we didn't score a touchdown. We just didn't have – Ebby's offense didn't even have that. And it just blew my mind. Like, how do we not have this level of simple X's and O's finding a way to get a big on a little? And so that's just a very simple concept that we can look forward to seeing. Again, talking about running the RPO, running the power stuff, running the inside stuff, running some outside stuff, running a lot of and checks off of that. Seth was with us. Mike Leach might put 5 tags on one play. H flip, 96, Z post, X delay, F sail, Y hook. He just tagged everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody knows what they're like just know, man, the capabilities to literally go schoolyard. Or, hey, we're going ace 92. We line up, get to the line of scrimmage. The quarterback is going to hand signal you tags. So things that were just not available are now available. So that's that. Let me touch on the other thing you asked. Hopefully, did I answer your question? Did I get context?
I think so. I got something I'm going to add on a follow-up, but touch on the timeline. Cool. A little bit.
The second thing is, I don't think he can commit to 5 just because we don't have an identified 5 who have done it for him. So I believe philosophically that Beatembo will probably make everybody a 1 and a 1A to push them every day in practice. And probably the Thursday before week 0, which is the week before week practice, they'll identify the starters. Okay. You know, a Sexton might be entrenched, you know, but you've got too many guys right now who, like you said, you got a Bates and the Branson kid. Like, you don't want one of those guys to get comfortable week 1 of camp. You want those guys pushing their ass until the Thursday before game week. So I bet. And who do we have week 1? Temple Friday night. Is that right?
Temple is the opener. Yep.
That's a game where we can feel good about seeing two. They probably, if it were me, I don't know if coach would do this, so I can't act like I know this, but if it were me, I'd probably just have two. I would say, hey guys, we're going to have 2 sets of starting lines. Yes, somebody's going to go out first, but if you kick ass tonight and the person who went out first doesn't kick ass, you could be the flip flop tomorrow. Like, that was literally how we did it at receiver, right? Like, you know, Jay Norm and I had to bring it every freaking week. Curtis and Antoine had to bring it every freaking week. And so I think they'll deploy that, especially week 0, because Temple will give us an opportunity to see a lot of guys go out and have some success.
Yeah, I like a lot of what you're saying. I know one of the things we talked about last year, one of the reasons that the run game never got going was with Levy and how he was doing things. And we talked about the changes they made late in season that allowed Sawchuck to kind of flourish, is that they made the running back was required to really be able to be shifty in the hole, because guys were getting beaten in space far too often. And because of that, if you didn't have a Sawchuck who was able to be shifty enough from the moment he's got the ball in his hands to make that first guy miss, if you didn't make a miss, it was a no gainer. Like, and that was far too often to open up the year. So to just be able to say, we're going to run the ball to the numbers, we're going to run the ball to the size advantage, we're going to get our long guys on your not so big, not so long guys, and try to make things work in our favor, I think is massive. You also touched on the depth piece. You know, the overall talent, and this improves both sides of the ball, obviously, but the fact that you do have an Eddie Pierre-Louis who's just ridiculously athletic, like, you could take him and put him in the 2008, 2007, or even that 2003, 2004, and athletically, guys, he's going to fit in with your Trent Williams, your Duke Robinsons, your Phil
JB's, Dukes,
yeah, Jamal
Lord
Brown,
Holt,
yeah,
Davin Joseph.
He's gonna look the part, and I think you touched on it for a while. It has taken them a little bit to get the offensive line where it needs to be, you know. And I use Logan Howland is a really good example. I know I've mentioned him on the podcast recently, but I don't want to use him as an example of playing, right? You know, who knows what that looks like. He's certainly going to be a factor in the depth chart, I would imagine. But in terms of how long it takes to develop that position, right? You have guys where strength programs and the coaching aren't the same high school to high school. So it takes a guy like him a solid 2 years to get ready. And BV is jumping into this third year, man, trying to make things happen. I think this is the year where the expectations of the offensive line can start to hit that. We need to look like, you know, we looked in 2017, 2016, 2018, right? To get back to those kinds of bodies. And this is the first year, I would say, where when OU comes out this fall, you're going to have guys who are now so many years in the program, they're going to look a lot closer to what they looked like in 2017, 2018. You know, when you had Schmidt still being a factor to what those guys were doing in the offseason. You know, I think OU's not afforded the time. I think Tennessee is going to either be that Tennessee game to me, it's in Norman. It looms large, right? And of course, and we'll do some previews of these games coming up. But to me, that is a game where you got Heupel coming back. You know he's going to feel a certain type of way. Even if he doesn't, he's going to say all the right things. But you got to know a part of him wants to go in there. And like any coach, right, any game, you want to win. But there's going to be something in there where he's going to want to get after it. And Tennessee has athletes on the side. Are they Georgia? No. But they certainly got athletes on that side of the ball. And if that offensive line does not have the continuity or at least a plan of attack that is going to be solidified enough where OU can get the run game going. Because to me, if OU can run the ball this year, and we'll touch on the quarterback position going forward, if OU can run the ball with success this season, you know, get back to having that, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 yard gainers on a regular pop, regular clip, I think you're going to see a team that, as you said in the last pod, wins 9 to 11 games. But if they cannot run the ball, if they struggle to move guys on the line of scrimmage, and as you talked about, every year we will hear some good things coming out of camp, and then they roll out game 1 and 2, and you see a game like SMU where the offensive line just looks like a complete dud. Your center's getting whipped. Your tackles are getting whipped. Your guards aren't able to get out on the edge, and they're getting beaten by backers who are just taking good angles, making the quick read, and beating the guy to the punch. You saw way too much of that a year ago, as well as some edge and perimeter blocking. And we'll talk about tight end and stuff and some of the other podcasts. But I think just to kind of put a big bow on it, man, they're not going to have a whole lot of time. And Tulane and Tennessee are going to be games where if they're not ready, that ends up being an early season loss that you probably can't afford to lose one of those. Man,
no,
I think
I
think we got a little bit of time, man. Let's you want to touch on quarterback today too? I think we got enough time.
Let's do it.
So offensive line, obviously quarterback, big piece of that, that they go hand in hand together. Jackson is the guy who's entrenched. He's the guy who's going to be leading the team. He was there at SEC Media Day. He's the guy who's going to be hopefully, you know, pushing for New York and a Heisman Trophy. We won't put that on him quite yet, but at Oklahoma, that's the expectation. I'm more interested to hear what you see in terms of the backup situation, because I think that's always an interesting deal. You know, last year I had said it, you know, Davis Bevel and the Booty were the guys who were technically listed as the two, but I think most fans knew, or at least the intelligent fan knew, if Dylan went down for any length of time and OU needed to go win a game, that Jackson was likely going to be your starter. He was going to be the guy they put out there, just talent wise. But you've now got a Michael Hawkins, who is a freshman who is definitely turning some heads in camp. You know, I've heard other players talk about him, how quick he is, how much he has improved from when he first got there to now, right? He has been just, it's been a fire hydrant, and he's been able to take it in and soak up the knowledge. And I think Latrell and Jackson have been very positive for him. But Casey Thompson also there, right? It's good to see a legacy guy like that find his way back to a program where a lot of people wanted to see him, right? He was a big piece of what Texas tried to do to Oklahoma a while back. But he, who do you see in terms of that backup position if OU this year has to go win a game? And then obviously your thoughts on Jackson will bury towards the end. Who do you see being the guy? Is it going to be Hawkins, or is it going to be Thompson, who's probably going to be your you know, closeout game guy? What do you see that looking like this year?
So read the tea leaves. A couple of things. CT is involved in the program. He's involved in alumni stuff, and I'm talking about Charles Thompson. By the way, big bro to me, love him to death. He looked out for a young lad when I was a youngster, and he was not very popular at that time, I got to tell you, right?
Wow.
But Casey doesn't come to OU if there isn't a plan to make sure he's a stopgap starter in the event there's a 1 or 2 game injury. Like, let's, like, by the way, that's not even a discussion. I saw Hawk and I saw CT at the spring game. I guarantee you they both fully are aware and understand that. Two legacy quarterbacks. One's a true freshman. One's like a 9-year senior. Obviously, I'm exaggerating. But it's if I were to capture the quarterback position today, I would say it feels really good that OU has a plan, right? And whether you loved him or hate him, Link had a plan. Every other year, we're going to go for the number one guy. And by the way, it worked. Or either we transferred him in or we recruited him, right? Between Bake and Kyler and obviously Hurts and then yeah. Caleb, right? Like Link had a plan, and we rolled the dice because aside from when Kyler was our backup, we had a guy, and then it was kind of like, yo, behind it. Well, it looks to me like we've created a plan or are going in the direction of a plan where, number one, we're going to recruit the highest caliber quarterback we can every single year, which I really like that. You know, we talked about the 2025 or 2026 kid, stud. Dude looks like a Cam Newton in the making, right? He's coming up through the pipeline. But one, we have a quarterback and we got him some skins last year. I'm here to tell you if Farouk doesn't fumble that pass, we're up, I think, 14, getting ready to go up 21. Arizona's ready to quit. There isn't enough time on the clock. If we go up 3 scores, Farouk fumbles the ball, that turns from a 21-point lead to that. They go down a score, and now it's 7 points. They've got momentum. We lose the game. If Farouk doesn't fumble, Jackson is going into the preseason as a preseason all-SEC guy because he has the credentials. He's in the money conference, and he's got some measurables, and he played in some big games. So I don't have as much concern about what he can do. I do have some concern about what he will do. Because he's got to produce every game. He can't have a wild moment and then a suck ass moment and expect OU fans to be okay with that, especially in the SEC. But we've got an entrenched starter. Yeah. I think Hawk knows that. I think Casey knows that. I think Casey and CT understand that Hawk being a first year player is not a guy that the program wants to have to depend on. If Jackson Arnold strains a muscle, whatever, he's got a sore shoulder and he's got to sit out a game or two. God forbid we ever go against Texas again in October and we've got a deer in the headlights. Literally, he looked like a deer out there. Yeah. Right. literally. And then the next year he gets killed on the goal line and looked like a deer again. He looked like Bambi on that play.
Thinking towards ACL.
Casey addresses. That's the word. Casey addresses the short term, the 2-game plug and play. And he's been in a bunch of offenses, right? He's been in big stadiums. He's not going to be afraid to go into, Death Valley if we need to against LSU and shit the bed. You don't know if our first year quarterback, no matter how talented he is going to do that. So that's that part. The other part is we also have, and Barry, I think you'll agree with me. How many times have we been getting ready for a team and their starting quarterback is like, oh, he's a good player, but we've kind of got better talent than them. But then the backup's a better athlete and can run, and the backup kicks our ass. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm thinking about? Remember Wes V a couple years back? I think it's Lynx last year. And the starting quarterback, we dominate his ass. They bring the other guy in, and we can't. I think he fumbles but going into
Venable's
the end zone.
First year. That was Venable's first year. In West Virginia?
No. This is when we're playing in Norman. We win this
game.
Oh,
the Norman
we win the game.
Okay.
We're in Norman, and they've got a bunch of big D linemen that are big time dudes. Nah, this is what's my blonde head buddy's name that went to South Carolina? What's the quarterback?
Rattler.
This is Spencer Rattler, this is his era. But Wes V, I forget who the starter is. He was a kid who transferred 3 or 4 times. And then they brought the backup in, and Buddy had juice, and we couldn't.
It was JT Daniels and Garrett Green.
There it is. And so what Hawk gives us, right, is the flexibility. There's going to be, there could potentially be a game where, like, we just need a better athlete. Yeah. JFA is a plus quarterback athlete. Hawkins is a plus football athlete. Hawkins could play receiver. And it wouldn't be a huge drop off if he had time to get it. Hawkins could for sure play safety, right? A quarterback's intelligence. He's got a little bit of size on him. I love it. The plan says we've got our 5-star guy. We've got our short term stopgap guy if we need him for a couple of games. And we've got a high ceiling athlete over here who can throw the ball. And if put in a pinch, right, we're in a game, we're up 21. Hey, let's see what the pup can do and get him some confidence. That kid can go out there and throw for 200, run for 100, and have 3 touchdown scoring plays and really be setting himself up for us to put JFA in the league in a year or two or however long he needs for his seasoning. Now we've got Hawk on deck, and then he's got competition coming. I love the plan. I think it's a really good plan. I don't think we could be in a much better place. Casey, Thompson gives us that turnover or that the bridge. He's that bridge player that makes sure we got a high end backup in the event something happens.
Well, I mean, that's running your program like a championship program. You're not going to win a title, and you're not going to be able to have those moments where maybe your quarterback isn't playing your best, or he goes down, or if you don't have a guy who can step in and do that. All of these teams historically that have won titles or at least been in contention towards the end of the year have had a guy who can just, fill in the gap. There's no reason in this day and age with the portal, especially if you're a program like Oklahoma who now has really dialed in to this NIL stuff and the Kimry family, we didn't talk about it, but doing the $20 million donation, that is enormous. Right. That is a massive, massive boost to the program. That is stuff that is historic, but you don't compete year in and year out without having those depth needs addressed. You can't just, go out there and hope nothing happens. You have got to prepare for things on a rainy day, man. That's why it's called a rainy day fund. Right. You gotta have a freaking strategy for when it's thunder and lightning and your roof comes off. If you do not have a plan for when you lose your freaking roof and it's like, well, tough. We don't have a tent. We don't got a camper. We didn't get insurance on the home. Whatever it is, you can't do that. And OU has had too many years, and Lincoln honestly just left the cupboard so dry. That Venables was in a spot where he kind of was choosing between the worst prom dates you could imagine, right? But Booty's not an awful player, and Bevel is not an awful player. Well, Bevel did not play very well, but I wouldn't say he's an awful player.
For Oklahoma,
not great. Not great. That's how you lose 49-0. But to touch on Jackson a little bit, I've gone back and watched the games where he played a year ago, watched the Arizona game. And for him, he has all of the tools. He's got the feet. He's got the Baker type feet, right? Where he's really, really quick in close space. He's a guy who's going to be very mobile in the pocket. He's going to be able to extend the pocket when he needs to. He's going to do well on boots. He can do the RPO stuff and take off, right? He's a factor in the run game. He's a big body who can get downhill on you and, you know, to take a safety in a corner and some of the backers to the woodshed if he catches you right. But for him, it's going to be learning how to manipulate players with his eyes. That is one thing I saw in the Arizona game he did not do a lot of, right? There wasn't
Very good assessment.
And if you're playing against a defense with some seasoning, you just can't do it, right? You go against a Georgia or whoever. If you're a guy who is your first read's your man, which I wouldn't say that was DG's issue. DG had some other things that were just more physical tools. I think he had some of the mental stuff down. He just physically couldn't get to that third read and be on time with the ball just because he did not have the velocity and pack the same punch and have the release quick enough to do it. Jackson has that. So now it is about the mental side. And I think them keeping Luttrell, and I think this is a good spot to kind of take it full circle and wrap us up today. Them keeping Luttrell was just as vital to me as them keeping Jackson, because you did not want him having to relearn a new language, relearn a new system, have to basically start from scratch with guys he doesn't know. And you never know, maybe the new guy comes in and likes Hawkins more, says, you're a redshirt freshman, you're a true freshman, I like your game, but you just don't know. So you don't want to disrupt the apple cart. Obviously, Venables would have something to say about that, but you never know with new coaches, man, right? The different preferences, the different things, the attributes that they hold in higher regard. So I think the relationship he had with Luttrell, being able to keep that continuity, probably keep a lot of the language the same, I would imagine. You know, maybe stuff changes in the next couple years, but being able to keep that the same. For me, with Jackson, it's going to be, what is your ability to lead? Can you put the team on your back? Can you, you know, go to Ole Miss, you know, in towards the end of the season or kind of middle end of the season, and when you're down three and you need to go get a touchdown, are you able to convert on third and three with the pass game, right? Is Luttrell afraid to call things because of your ability, right? And that was something, yeah. Yeah, that was something a year ago, what we saw it at times, right? Touch on that. I want to hear your thoughts.
That's money.
I think that's huge.
You know, it's interesting, right? This is a very sensationalized world, and we're really caught in the moment world, and everyone's like, oh, DG this, DG that. And I guess it kind of makes me sound like a hater, but like, y'all can't cap how many games were we at the end of the game saying, why didn't we do this or why didn't we do that? And more often than not, it was because coach was afraid to put DG in the position to be the difference maker. You just can't have that at quarterback. And I think he's in a good spot in Oregon. They got a playbook that's gonna highlight his strengths and kind of hide some of his weaknesses. But they're going to play Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State or Whiskey. Iowa is going to have a tough defense, one of those games. And it's going to be, can the Q make the play? Yeah. And like you said, Jackson, for all his warts, we saw Jackson strike and throw the strike and on his own merits. Yeah. DG is going to have to do that. I think that's one that's a nuance, Barry, that a lot of people, some people might not even agree, but that's so, like, how many, by the way, the last two seasons were like, mm-hmm. why didn't they? Kansas comes to mind. Yeah. We've got the Kansas game won. If we'll just go get one more first down and coach doesn't want to even try to get it, let's just run the ball, be safe, stop them with defense. And of course we get them the fourth down and they pick up the first down on a throw. It's like their fourth and 18, something like that. I think that's a big deal. I think the football community will appreciate that. That's a good one, bro. Dylan just was a cue that you didn't want to put it in his hands in certain situations because there was a fairly high likelihood or percentage that he wasn't going to be able to deliver. Jackson's going to check that box with physical traits. We're going to see if he can check that box with the mental headspace.
Yeah, and I think so much of that, too, is how you're leading in practice week in and week out. Because Baker, he didn't always make the play. OU lost games with Baker at quarterback. But
100%.
But what they weren't afraid of, what was the Baker might not convert the play, but he wasn't going to make the catastrophic play. Right. And that's what your fear is, right? You make the catastrophic play, and instead of giving your defense a chance to play ball, the other team's running down the other side into the end zone because they picked it off. So those are the things that we're going to be looking for and assessing with Jackson. Again, for me, it comes down to the mental and the nuance, because physical traits, I'm going to tell you guys, the perimeter passing game, all the bubbles, all that stuff. We saw it a little bit in the spring game with the space that Burks had to work with a lot of times whenever they did some of those swing passes, some of those stuff that were the quick game that Baylor did so well in that 13-14 range. If you got a quarterback who can get the ball out quick before the defense has the chance to be into their stride and accelerate, that is the math and the space of the game. If your pass velocity beats the ability for that DB or that backer to recognize and get into his feet, you're going to get more yards. And 1 to 2 yards is the difference a lot of times in winning and losing football games, because that is first downs. So that'll be the story for me this year, D-Mac. I think with the offensive line, time will tell. They don't have a chance. They don't have the luxury of waiting a whole lot of time. If Jackson plays well, that certainly helps. But as always, man, any closing thoughts before we get on out of here today?
One, along with Jackson having a distinct advantage, quick game, bubble, you know, screen game, layered throws. It's a heavy and important aspect of our offense. I think the best layered thrower we've ever had was probably Sam. Sam could throw that intermediate over route, that anticipation whole ball with on a line, but over the backer. Jackson brings that back. We just did not have it. Like, Dylan's arm can't make those throws unless it's a lot of what Coach V is doing has not gotten the national acclaim. We didn't win enough. You know, we should have won OSU, but we definitely should have won KU, right? And then of course we lose the bowl game. I mean, we're in the playoff. If we figure out a way to win those two games, we're not even in the Arizona game. We're playing in the playoffs, and everyone's talking about Sark and BV because BV beat Sark head to head. And so we're close. My expectations is that we needed to make another leap. And guys like Sexton being willing to be versatile, guys like McCullough being willing to not just be the man, right? Like, McCullough is not in a position. We'll talk about the backers and overhang position here, down the road. But like, McCullough's fighting for his life, but he also didn't transfer out again, right? And he came to OU thinking he'd be entrenched. And so anyway, I don't want to go too heavy into that. Just to say the attitude. Mm-hmm. Right. Guys are willing to say, I am one of many and I'm a part of the cog. I'm a cog of the machine that's going to railroad your ass on these railroad tracks. I think that's really, really important as well. And then the continuity to keep Seth is a big deal. To bring in the new DC and have a younger a prototype of Venables coming in, who's going to be enthusiastic and we'll have a ton of that's you're going to see there's going to be more hair on fire stuff happening this fall, and so all that's good. And then I want to say a couple of things. I got a group, Facebook group, man. They show us love, bro. They share all our stuff, man. They have little groups talking about our pod. Ball Talk, man. SBT. By the way, all Sooner grads, all professionals. Hey, but they with the shits too. If you cut up, they'll come for you. By the way, they'll come for you if you speak on OU incorrectly or you got some shenanigans going on. Hey, also, Sooner alumni. I'm on his nutrition stuff. I guess I am kind of like sponsoring or like whatever, but JML, ex-athlete at OU, he's an Olympic-esque guy. I've been taking his vitamins and taking his pre-workouts and stuff, and it's definitely been having a huge impact on my body. And so I just wanted to say a couple encouraging words for individuals offline who are making it happen. Always super dope to do this with you. It's never a task. It's always hella fun. I enjoy doing it. And for the Sooner Nation, man, salute to the comments on YouTube. You guys are dope. Somebody was like, by the way, let me address this. I do got one more thing. Don't Let's you go. ever, coming to the comments saying Mackie be jocking University of Texas. Anybody who has ever heard our pod for 83 episodes knows damn well you ain't gonna never hear me paying any type of homage, respect. Frankly, they can kiss you know what. So somebody was like, you guys always like, bro, you clearly don't listen to our pod. You're listening to somebody else, bro. Cause Mackie and Barry, we don't give too much props to them boys over there on the other side of the Red River. So
dude was in the playoffs. You gotta be objective. We've always prided ourselves on being super objective with stuff. And Sark was in the playoff. Not a whole lot of playoff coaches in the SEC right now.
Like yeah, that's what it was, right? Because we had Sark at three. Buddy was like, yes. I was like, come on.
We had the top three have been in the playoff. It was Smart, DeBoer, and Sark. So, yeah.
You know who we left off, though? We left our buddy from LSU. We left him.
Oh, Kelly. Kelly and Kiffin were the two. Kelly and Kiffin at Ole Miss is another one.
Kiffin's a scrub.
Not a fan of Kiff.
What has he done? I mean, what has he done
since he's done nothing. Boy, he's gotten close
to beating Bama. He's gotten close to beating Bama like four times and hasn't gotten over the hump. That's what
I'm gonna tell you. When Kiffin retires and has a podcast, that thing is gonna get millions of listens every week.
Oh, brother.
He's one of the closest I've seen. He's not Leach was unique, right? You know this firsthand in terms of being under his tutelage as a player. But Kiffin, man, he's not afraid to put it out there, man. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of that stuff. So.
He's got some Spurrier in him. He's got some Spurrier in him for sure. I think he and Spurrier, like, you know, Spurrier gonna talk his shit for real. So talking about Dad Spurrier.
Awesome stuff. Well, hey, as always, guys, podcast Barry Mac Show brought to you by OUinsider.com. Go to OUinsider.com, get yourself a membership. We're over there interacting on the board, talking to the folks. They're liking the evaluations, a lot of engaging conversation going on over there. A lot of just good football conversation, right? We've seen message boards, forums over the years evolve and morph, and you'll have some that cater a little more to like the general talk, and then some really get into the football talk where there's multiple boards over there on OU Insider. Lindsay Street is where a lot of the football stuff is going down, a lot of the insight on the recruits. So I just encourage you guys, go try it out. They're running promos every now and again. So if that's something you're looking for, you know, go take a look. But OUinsider.com is where it is at. Brandon Parker and the gang do a mighty fine job. But DMAC, great show. I'm sure the fans are going to have a lot to say about what we brought up today, especially along the offensive line. I think quarterback, maybe not as much controversy, but on the O-line, for sure. Talk about it in the comments. Make sure you go rate, review, follow us on social media. As always, Sooner Nation, thank you for listening, and we will see you soon.